Welcome, everybody, to episode 191 of the Whiskey and Watches podcast. Buzzy and Spencer back. We had Spangler and Spence yesterday. Maybe we'll get all three of us together at some point.
But I feel like that's a mathematical possibility, even if it, however slight, it is a possibility.
It is. It absolutely is. Like I said, though, we may all get in the same room together because within a month he will be back Cincinnati side.
Looking forward to that.
Yeah. There's allegedly a Red Bar meetup tonight, but it was at the wrong time and on the wrong end of town, and my wife had a hair appointment tonight. So,
but other than that,
other than all of that, you know, our semi-annual
meeting. That's right. That's right.
That we do.
No, that's good. I mean, yeah, I'm sure the one in 2026 will be lovely.
Yeah. Well, we have the next Whiskey and Watches in November. That is an unofficial Red Bar meetup. So, you know, that was our last one prior to tonight.
It's a good point. Although with the Bay Horse Inn closed, it just doesn't hit the same. Makes me sad.
This is true. It's okay. We'll wake up the day after we drop this episode to be deleted from the group chat.
I figured I may already be deleted and I just don't know it, right? I've been out for Lent, so even less active than normal.
I don't think we've booted you yet.
That's good. That's good.
Anyway.
I'm glad that whether it's for any good reason or just sheer inattentiveness, I'm glad that I'm still there.
I'm going to guess it's for sheer inattentiveness. If you can tie inattentiveness to our infrequentness of meetings, then I think that you're safe.
You know, the funny thing is, it's a good group of lads, right? Which is why we bother to do anything at all.
Yes, this is true. And you know what they say about any good group of lads is we all just give each other nonstop shit. So that's exactly what we're doing.
Literally the entire point.
Correct. Yeah.
Absolutely.
So, well, anyway, my good sir, what is on your wrist and what is
it? All right. Well, it is wonderful being back. We had some sort of crud descend on our house and a couple of weeks of either taking care of kids or feeling crummy myself. You know, between the time change and like my first full leg day after about 2 weeks off of weight training, I'm struggling today. And, you know, since I can't just call up Dr. Feelgood and get shot full of uppers, I decided to go with a house Manhattan tonight. And probably not as effective, but by God, it's delicious. Even better than normal, thanks to the vermouth. That sweet, sweet method vermouth. Utter delight. Delicious. Nutritious. Gotta love it. That's in the glass. And then, newsflash, the Black Bay 58 is back on the stock Oyster bracelet. It's funny because putting on the Strap Habit Boingy Boy NATO, I think, was supposed to just be kind of a fun sideshow, if you will. Right, I mean, I got that specific one because the it goes so perfectly with the gilt dial. And I betcha that was on for like 4 months. I mean, it's been on that watch for a long time. And then the worse for the wear. But yeah, it's kind of nice to have it back on a proper bracelet. You know, feels a little bit more... not dressy, but a little less relaxed, I guess I'll say. But yeah, it's only been that way for like the past 2 days. All right, Spence, what about you?
Well, you know, I also have a house Manhattan with the sweet, sweet vermouth from Method and working on finishing the bottle of Michter's Rye, because my wife, when I sent her in, They had one bottle left of Sazerac Rye at Kroger, so she picked that up, which is not something you see very often. Although, sidebar, well, first, I will say it's a fancy occasion because I'm using a bamboo skewer. I don't have a cocktail coupe yet, so we'll work on that. But
cheers.
I will say, when I was in – so I did a little bit of travel last week, which is why – I think we dropped an episode, but we didn't record, or I don't know. We haven't officially moved to biweekly, but it hasn't quite been weekly. It's been like every 9 days. So like every week and a half-ish, we do something. I was traveling a bit last week at a conference, the first dual city conference I've ever been at, in which I had meetings one day in Boston, but the day that I had meetings in Boston, I had dinner in Chicago, and I had meetings in Chicago the next day. It was a very good time. The bank that was hosting, I want to give a shout out to a couple of folks that I met who are that may be listening because they were interested in the podcast, one of which was wearing a moon swatch, which we talked about at length, and then we talked a little bit about Grand Seiko and some of the downtime. So that person, those two people know who they are out of the London office of said bank that was hosting. What's the other funny thing that I was going to say?
Moonswatch, one of us.
Well, there's Moonswatch, one of us. Oh, in Boston, I was drinking some Manhattans and they were mixing them with Sazerac Rye. So I'm like, all right, this will be good. That was a good pickup by Rach. So that is what is in the glass, although it's still Michter's. It'll be Sazerac probably in the next week.
I picked up a bottle of Sazerac when I was down at Buffalo Trace. If anyone's in the neighborhood, they had a very healthy selection. That's, locally, it can be a pain to get, but that and the actual Buffalo Trace properties are plenty easy to get at the actual distillery.
Mm-hmm. Well, and then on the wrist, I've got something that might be a little underappreciated if you read the title. I am wearing
Rolex.
I guess it really just kind of depends on how you view it, because as a micro brand, I think they've gotten quite a bit of attention. But at the same point, they are like, I don't wear it enough, and every time I pick it up, I'm like, this is just a really good watch, and it looks significantly more expensive than it is. But I have on my Brew Metric chronograph, the gold PVD model, which if you squint a little bit, the K-shape is reminiscent of a Laurent Ferrier, a little bit, I guess. If you mix that with like Constellation TV dial and a Cartier Santos, maybe in some ways, but we'll talk about that a little bit later. We got some hot takes, maybe.
I've heard that Cartier is the enthusiast's choice these days.
I have. And what I will say, though, is there are a couple of Cartiers that I would definitely enjoy having in the collection. Let me put it that way. I mean, I feel like they are getting quite a bit of love lately, maybe undeservedly so. But I got to say, the Santos in and of itself, the medium Santos is fantastic.
Yeah.
Like, if you wanted a kind of a fancy boy daily watch, like, that's the way to go. It zigs a little bit instead of zags, which I think is pretty cool.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I mean, to be fair, like, it's a cool story, right? Named after Brazilian millionaire. I suppose the man had Brazilians of dollars and decided to to be an early aviator. I mean, I'm sorry. Yeah. Fairly difficult to come up with a cooler namesake for a watch.
Yeah. No, absolutely. Because And I will say, our buddy, who's a former Marine, who has one, wears his on an orange rubber strap that absolutely slaps. So, like, the combination of that watch on an orange rubber is pretty dope. So, anyway,
it's funny because part of me, when you were describing, a typical, not quite a daily, but something that's a little bit fancy, I also go to Bulgari Octafinissimo. To me, those are they are very similar, not necessarily stylistic, but they are similar in affect.
Well, and they are, so I, in some ways, I feel like if you want to go this way, this way. I agree with you on that statement. But the Cartier is the old money version and the Bulgari is the new money version. If you want to go old money, new money, or modern and vintage, or like modern and classic, like
without a doubt,
that's how it works.
Yeah. Without a doubt.
Yeah. Yes. We are in agreement here. We're just bringing up more details to add to the argument to make it sound. So,
yeah.
Should we talk about it is a moon watch, right? Like, and it looks more, I guess in some ways it looks more like the moon than the OG moon watch does. Cause the moon, the part of the moon that we see looks pretty white, silvery, you know, I guess, you know, that's the side that always gets the sun or doesn't always get the sun. That's the sign that's always lit up that we can see it because it has a geostationary orbit, as it were. Some of us are more astronomy nerds than others, but
love it. Tell me more. Oh. Tell me more about how that rotation is synced. Mm. Yeah.
I gave you just enough to tide you over.
Hey, good wordplay, man. Ugh.
Yeah, I'm trying. Well, so that was the other thing. The gentleman that I mentioned earlier had a moon swatch on. That was the other watch spotting. GA did a dodgeball tournament for the boosters, and I participated, and my team captain was wearing the one that I wanted. He was wearing the Pluto to play dodgeball. So like, yes. No, anyway.
So. Very nice.
That was the watch spotting us. I mean, there were plenty of other cool things that I saw, several Rolexes, whatnot, but like the coolest thing that I was like, oh, moon swatch. Yeah. So anyway, yeah, that new white dial. I had some time in Chicago, and now I'm kind of regretting not just strolling down Michigan Avenue to the Omega Boutique to see if they had it. Like, I probably should have done that.
I should have.
But I didn't, and now I'm a little mad at myself.
I was at that boutique. I mean, God, at this point, 5 years ago, probably. And they were utterly excellent, very attentive, and my only regret was not asking them to bring out the Plo Prof.
Yeah.
You know, they were incredibly gracious and helpful. So, I highly recommend. Yeah. Yeah, the white dial, like, finally, you know, the plain Jane steel Speedmaster gets a white dial. And, okay, I don't think I have any white dialed watches right now. And come to think of it, I'm not sure if I've ever owned one. I've always thought that they slapped. So, like, is there really anyone among us that would pick the Black Dial Explorer 2 over the white dial? I mean, obviously somebody does because they sell the black dial version, but I feel like I feel like most people's hearts are molded firmly in the mold of the white dial is the way to go there. And man, with this Speedmaster, I get that the black dial is the quote unquote real one. It has all of the history. I'd have a damn hard time if I was buying a Speedmaster. Even, you know, not doing the cop-out thing either of, well, just buy both of them eventually. Like, okay, that's cool if that works for you. You know, many blessings your way, but that's not a realistic answer for me, and I'd have a damn hard time. Like, this would induce analysis paralysis, because I think that white dial looks just incredible. I think it looks better than the black dial.
And they added the red accents, and I will tell you that it has the same red accents as my white Seamaster. And that watch,
is incredible.
Slaps in person. So like, instead of a ceramic dial, this one has a white lacquer dial. It has the black markers. Mm-hmm. The Seamaster has the black surrounds around the loom plot. Like, I'm with you. I think had I not had I been in the market for that one right now, it would be very tough too. In some ways, even because I have the other one, because it's like, well, I've already got the White Dial Seamaster. I should get like, should be White Dial Omegas. Like, that's just how I should roll. I don't know. I mean, when I don't think I'm going to own both, but like,
yeah.
If money were no object, I mean, I think that would be the way to go. The only reason I wouldn't be sure is the Black Dial is still it's a classic. It's an all-time classic, like nearly perfect.
Without a doubt.
And the Hessellite is the only one that is flight qualified. And I am a big, as we just discussed briefly, a space nerd. So like I can see folks saying like the folks who are going to get it, either they don't like White Dial watches, which is fine. They think the red accents are a little too splashy, which there's going to be somebody said, oh, if they wouldn't have done it with the red, I'd be all in. I'm like, okay, really? Like the Speedmaster and one little, like, okay, fine. But it's going to be the purists or the folks who are really drawn to like the NASA connection that like, and even for them, the only one that really works is the Hessel.
Right.
It can't even be Sapphire. So
zero sandwiches for those.
Correct. Correct. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think I'd be hard pressed as well. Like I haven't even seen it in person, but in pictures, and especially in the live pictures, like, man, it looks good.
Yeah. It's, and you know, obviously there's nothing wrong with wanting the quote unquote real legit Speedmaster. That's a perfectly legit reason to like it. We are talking about two nearly perfect chronographs. Guess what? Like, they don't even have like hokey nonsense where the one set of lugs is narrower than the others, or the pinions are slightly off from the center pinion of the watch. Daytona.
I mean, good enough for NASA, good enough for me.
Yeah, I agree. roundly. Yeah. Yeah. That's how I do a lot of things in my life. You know, it's like you've been over how my shed's like a 300-foot tall building with doors that slide open on the front that a crawler can go out of.
It can rain inside.
It can. So. Yeah. Yeah. Vehicle assembly building. Right. Good enough for NASA. Good enough for me.
Florida's humidity helps.
Just a little bit. Just a little bit.
Yeah.
When I was a little guy, trying to think how old. Probably like 11 or 12, I would guess. We were on vacation in Florida, and I did get to go out to Cape Canaveral. Man, what a fantastic experience. Highly recommend that to anyone.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's a look.
Yeah, it is.
In some ways, it looks more like the rockets, too. The splash of red, the black bezel, the white dial. Come on.
Point. That's a good point. Oh, man, you're stacking up reasons.
No one's made that point yet. Somehow.
Well, it's a good thing that we're thinking of the classic rockets and not, like, you know, the rocket that Amazon boy has that looks like a... Well, this is a family podcast, so I won't say what it looks like.
Yeah, yeah.
One wouldn't want one of those on their wrist.
Although, here's the other thing, too. What I would say is if you went with either a space shuttle motif, or even some of the Titan rockets, ones that are like white and orange, maybe with a little bit of blue, I could see like an orange bezel or an orange seconds hand or something, and like some blue subdials, and like... If you just leaned in on the rocketry theme, like you could have a ton of fun with Speedies, because like there's a lot of good colorways you could make them into.
Well, I mean, to a certain point, that's what they did with all of the moon swatches, right? They did that, but cranked up to 11 because they also had the lever of actually changing the case color.
Yeah, they could do that. Oh, maybe that's the next series of moon swatches, is all the different rockets of NASA's history. That'd be pretty cool.
That'd be sweet. Give me a Mercury Redstone. None of that Mercury Atlas nonsense. Some suborbital action. It's funny, right? Because I loved space growing up. I still do. But when you're a kid, you didn't grasp just how utterly insane it was to just put some utter men in a fucking can and put it on top of a ballistic missile. Just it's the entire structure that you're connected to, it just blows up. That's what it does. And then you just hope that the nerds did the math right, that it blows up at the back of it in a controlled manner. I mean, utterly impressive.
Again, I know it's come up on this podcast before, come up on other podcasts before from our buddy, Mr. Stockton. If you haven't, read the book, The Right Stuff. Read the book, The Right Stuff. If you're not as inclined to read the book, watch the movie, but please read the book. Just utterly, utterly fantastic. And really kind of lets you into the mind of the NASA scientists behind things, to the mind of the astronauts, the mind, like just like the whole chimpanzee program, all that kind of stuff. So anyway, we could go on and on and on about that. But yes, the hot take, the new white dial Speedy. It's a looker.
Yeah. Also just in water's wet.
Yeah. Yeah. No. They took a watch that already looked nearly perfect and they just made a white version of it. Okay, cool. Sign me up.
And yet I salivate.
Yes. Hey, anyway. So there's that.
Yes, there is.
The other thing, this is a bit of a conundrum for you.
Okay.
Because I've been thinking about it. Not that any of these are imminent, not that any of these are going to happen. Some things would move, other things like that, but speaking of watches that have a space tie, the new meteorite dial constellation in steel with the blue dial and the awesome bezel.
Oh, yes.
Hold on.
It's funny.
Do you see where this is going?
Let me stop you there. I cracked up there because I forgot they existed, and then you said something, and then I realized, oh, yeah. There's something insanely beautiful out there. So
here's the thing. We're going to ignore the new white dial Speedy for now. I'm just going to ignore that because we're going to, for the sake of this conversation, even though we just had that conversation, we're going to ignore it for the sake of this conversation. There's another watch that might be coming out that I have long requested. It is going to be roughly the same price point as that constellation. And we're going to play a game of, would you rather, Rolex Coke GMT or Meteorite Constellation? And I know listeners are screaming now at the car or wherever they're at saying, how is this even a question, you moron? It's clearly the Rolex. However, resale aside, and knowing the soft spot for the constellation and a awesome, gorgeous blue, like, which one are you more likely to see in public? Okay.
Yeah. So just in kindness to our listeners, let's caveat that this is a no sell, right? Like there's some sort of thing, maybe even this is being gifted to you. You cannot part with it. Let's take the value and money stuff completely off the table.
The only value thing we're talking about is essentially they cost roughly the same amount of dollars.
Right.
That's it. At MSRP, give or take, based on where the other GMTs are priced in stainless steel, they are nearly identical in
price. I pulled up the webpage and I'm just staring at the blue dial.
It's good.
So damn good. I mean, it hasn't fallen prey to that bogus sapphire bezel, right? It's proper steel bezel. Mm-hmm.
It's even a little roughed up too, which I think is cool. Like it just, the way they kind of blasted it, like they do the Necton version of the Seamaster, mm-hmm. like it's a good looking watch.
Ugh, that's terrible. You know, because the mind says Coke, but the heart wants that Connie.
It does. Now, in fairness, you could go and get a significantly thinner vintage Connie for a tenth of the price.
Yeah, but is it going to have meteorite dial?
It is not going to have any meteorite dial.
It won't even have a meteor wrong dial.
No, it will not.
It's a good thing that knockoff meteorite isn't a typical thing in watches. But it's also kind of a shame because I would call them meteor wrong dials.
That's true. That would be a good nickname for them. Yeah. It's funny because you're like, oof.
So like,
I know which one is,
especially for me. I know that you love the Coke bezel way more than I do. I'm more of a Pepsi guy, even though I'm Diet Coke for life. Yeah, that's my upper of choice. Yeah, I mean that blue is just, it's too stinking good. Like they even color matched the date wheel. I mean, come on. Oh, it's gorgeous. And unfortunately for me, the more that I look at the current generation of Constellations, the more I fall in love with the bracelet. Right?
Mm-hmm. Mm.
Mm-hmm. It's tough. By the way, if anyone out there wants a Manta SkyQuest, I'll make you a good deal.
Or a Seiko SRQ-029, SARX-069, or I think there might have been another
one. But really, listeners, you know that you wanna help Buzz do some fun stuff and maybe get some balls rolling.
So so for you then, if it was a Pepsi or a, like I prefer the Coke, you prefer Pepsi, if they were sitting in the case next to each other or like the Rolex counter and the Omega counter at the same store, like would it be a tougher decision or not?
Okay. So to be fair, what I'm going to do is I'm going to pull up the Rolex webpage also, just so I can just gaze upon both. Oh, Rolex website, you are tiresome. There we go. it took me a whole bunch of scrolling and bullshit to get to the... an actual picture of it. I'm sorry. I, for some reason, I'm vulgar tonight. Shame upon me.
I'm going to use that now. So much scrolling and bullying.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like, come on. I've had a long day here.
You do vertical scrolling. Then you got to do sideways scrolling too, if I'm remembering correctly.
Ooh. I don't know. That's really hard, actually, now that I'm looking at both of them side by side, because I do love Pepsi. Long-time listeners of the podcast know that the thing that kind of awoke these feelings of watch lust was going to a talk where the speaker was wearing a Pepsi GMT Rolex. Oh, man. I don't know. I actually might take the GMT.
I mean, I think I would too. However, you know what would be disappointing to me is every time I wear it and I see somebody else wearing it, I'd be like, we're all hype beasts. I should have got the Connie. You know what I mean? Like, You're going to see significantly more Pepsis and Cokes and left-handed Sprites than you ever will. In fairness, probably Constellations in general.
True.
At least in Western culture. and two, definitely meteorite constellation. Like, I just go back and it's like, man, if you like integrated bracelet, sport watch, meteorite dial, chronometer certified, just like all of the things. Yeah, I don't know. I struggle.
Yeah.
Because there's the part of me that likes the weird stuff. And it'd be like, Coke is not a weird thing. Like that, like you're going to see those in the wild eventually when they can make enough of them.
Oh, very much so. So
it's like.
Very much so. I don't know.
Anyway.
Yeah, and here's the thing that kind of stinks, right? Because if you go with like a precious metal, Connie, then you completely are blowing the the money side of it out. Although to be fair, right, I mean the GMT mat, the meteorite Connie that we love so much is 9300. And you know, the GMT Master, it's
north of 10.
Yeah, it's
now.
11. So, I mean, to a certain point, what's 1700 among friends? But also, I mean, that is a decent chunk. Yeah, it's like 20%. 20% of the constellation.
Yeah. Anyway.
Oh, well.
It's a problem for a different day, but it is a problem.
Yes. It's actually more of a problem when you realize that probably even the meteorite constellation does not go for MSRP. That's...
I mean, it might now. Although, aren't those... Are the meteorite ones boutique?
That's a good question.
No, it's the new Planet Oceans, which also are very good looking. Kind of the military style ones that are all matte. Those are really good looking. Anyway, different.
Planet Oceans, just a cool name, too. I've always thought that was a badass name.
Mm-hmm. Anyway.
Accurate to a certain point, but yeah. It's like an entire planet that's an ocean. Like, what is this? A water world?
I mean, the constellation, as we talked about, meteorite dial or non-meteorite dial, very underrated watch, very underappreciated for what it is. And I think that is, we've teased this topic long enough, you know, 25 minutes, 32 minutes, however long it's been, that we've teased what the topic is. We should talk a little bit about underappreciated watches. You know, I, in some ways, we talked about it. I don't know if, I feel like a lot of the micro brands can be underappreciated. I think what you're getting from John at Brew with a design like this is, I mean, if you think about what goes into it, I mean, yes, he's won awards. Yes, very popular to an extent, but he is still essentially a
Stringer Bell guy. Wears those watches.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I mean, so like you look at this and you're like, you pick something like this up and you're like, man, that looks like an expensive watch. And it is, but it's not nearly as expensive as a lot of other things. And, in some ways, I'd say that I don't appreciate this watch enough. So there's that. Another one that came out that I really want to see in person, and I know we're trying to have the co-host – or the – sorry, not the co-host. We're trying to have the brand owner on. But we're working through some time zone difficulties. Thomas Van Straten from Fratello just launched VPC watches, and his first model that came out looks pretty spectacular. So we're gonna talk to him about that at some point in the future. But that is, I think in some ways there's a section of our hobby that really appreciates micro brands, and in some ways kind of really enjoys them. And I think then there's some other folks who don't really appreciate them for what they are.
Yeah, it is incredibly tough to be able to say whether a micro brand is underappreciated, because it's a definitional question of Do we mean underappreciated by the general public? Do we mean underappreciated by the audience of watch idiot savants, right? Like, it's very much a how do you define the question. So absolutely they're underappreciated by the general public because, I mean, there's a reason that they're micro brands, right? They don't have the same distribution or any mind share. I mean, realistically, like, Joe Q Public, if he knows any watches, it's very few.
Yeah. Now, that also being said, the same argument can be made for some of the higher-end independents who you wouldn't call micro-brands, although I guess when you get down to it from a production perspective, they are. Now, they're doing something different. Mm-hmm. That being said, it is kind of hard to call them underappreciated when a lot of the very high-end collectors who are spending $300,000 on Laurent Ferrier sport watches. It's really hard to call any brand that retails for that and likely moves for that underappreciated.
Oh, they are appreciated by people that move
they
that
are amount appreciated. Of money. Yeah, correct. So, you know.
Okay, here's...
I have a hot take.
Okay, yeah, give me your Go hot ahead. Take.
Well, so...
He's having a drink. It's so hot.
In some ways, and this is interesting because I feel like from an underappreciated perspective, this is only going to speak to the watch idiot savant section of this. Mm-hmm. And in some ways, it may not. But I think the general public, to the general public, this brand may be actually quite appreciated. When you talk about watch idiot savants and some of the things that we, or at least in our earlier stages, when we're tadpoles, when we're just first getting into being identified as that, you know, when you look at, like, in the shallows, when you're still just in the shallows and you're developing as a WIS, you know, there's a certain brand that, despite being completely vertically integrated, having all their movements in house, and having watches that sell for three figures. They do actually have watches that sell for three figures, but they also have watches that sell for six figures. But you haven't figured that out yet. There's a brand that you look down on. And when you think about it, at the end of the day, they do things very similarly to the brand with the crown, being vertically integrated, everything's in house, all that kind of stuff. To an extent. And someone's going to at me for being incorrect and actually saying that this brand does it better than Rolex, I would think, or something. I don't know. Anyway.
Enthusiasts, not experts.
Not experts, yeah. But in some ways, I think for a certain sect, and really, I've come to appreciate it as I've looked at certain watches in my collection compared to other more expensive Swiss brands, being like, I don't feel like I could own this and own this because they do the same thing. And I don't know that for another $2,000, that Swiss watch does it any better, is Seiko.
Oh, yeah.
Because I think the general public knows and appreciates Seiko as a very nice watch. It's Japanese. Japanese do things very well. If you think about, like, all of what everyone kind of knows Seiko for, if you're not a watch nerd, and even to those of us who are, we do tend to appreciate Seiko for what it is, but there's always that caveat of it's great, it's a Seiko, it's this. Like, it's in some ways it's a no-brainer, but it's not, like, appreciated for some of the really awesome, ridiculous stuff that they do. And I think they can be, in some ways, an enthusiast brand, in some ways a brand that everybody knows, but still be underappreciated for some of the crazy shit that they do. That is awesome.
Yeah, I mean, like, they make movements, hard Lex crystals. I mean, gosh, then when you pull Grand Seiko into the fold, they invented the spring drive. I mean, the quartz. I mean, it's funny, right? I was thinking that this is a really good edge case because this is not... it's not a question to me if they are underappreciated and that people don't appreciate them at all. Because I feel that everyone does appreciate them. I feel like mm-hmm. they could be underappreciated because they don't get the proper amount of respect due to them. You're right. This is it. It's not. It is not a a mind share, even being on someone's radar question. This is a question of, do they get the due respect for everything that they are capable of, right? From Seiko 5 sport models all the way up to, you know, the Creedors.
I
don't think they do either. Especially if you look at it from the entire organization, right? With Grand Seiko and Creedor and King Seiko.
And I think with some of it too, like, yes, there are, in fairness, this hobby of ours breeds different types of snobbery. And it doesn't have to be the cost version of snobbery. There can be accuracy snobs. There can be finishing snobs. There can be all this other type of stuff. But what I will say is, to those folks, accuracy is one, finish, but like, when you compare watches across the price spectrum, and you look at the 62 Moss that I have, the SPB 149, which they did release new. It's interesting to see that they've updated those watches. I mean, I guess it's been 4 years, so why not update it a little bit? Which is hilarious to think about that. Like, that watch is now old enough to have a new version of it. But is the finishing good? Yes. Is it fantastic? No, but that's a $1,300 watch.
Yeah.
Look at other $1,300 watches and tell me that the finishing is that much better. Maybe yes, maybe no, depending on maybe a micro brand, because there's no authorized dealer network. Okay, fine. But like I kind of look at it. It's like, in some ways, and this kind of, I think, speaks to Japanese culture, like, the movement accuracy on those movements is, you know, plus or minus, what, you know, 15 to 30 seconds a day. So someone's like, well, it's running 8 seconds slow. I'm like, that's really good for a Seiko movement. Like, yeah, but it should be better. I was like, yeah, but how many chronometers? I mean, yes, you're getting them from Zodiac. You're getting them from a couple of other Swiss brands, but you're not getting very many chronometer certified movements at that price point. And then the question all just kind of becomes, does it need to be like, is 30 seconds a day really going to break you? And I guess if that's where you're going to be at, like, go, like, you have very limited options. I hope you're happy with them. Like, I like the design. I like it. It's rugged as stuff. I'll be honest with you. Like, I've had that watch for 4 years, that one that we were talking about. I cannot find a scratch on that bracelet. And I wear it. And I wear it doing things that it should have a scratch. And I am hard pressed to find it. The coating they put on those things is insane. So, like, the bezel's mid.
You know. Yeah, we've spoken so many times about that watch specifically, that, like, it would be perfectly reasonable for you to purchase that one watch and just have that one watch and be completely happy with it for the rest of your life.
And that's if you wanted to spend over $1,000 on a watch. If you wanted to spend less than $1,000 on a watch, you should go pick up one of the Seiko 5 GMTs in a regular colorway, nothing splashy. And that's it. And it's got a cool little red hand on it. Yep. Awesome.
Those GMTs.
Learn how to use it. Set it to Zulu time and call it.
Those GMTs are great. The SKX 007 and 9 before them were great. Even the old, like, $60 Amazon special field watch Seiko 5. Those were sweet.
Yeah.
Those were like... Yeah. Those were like the Hamilton khaki little bro, but still very cool in and of themselves.
Mm-hmm. Just saying.
Yeah.
They do a lot of cool stuff.
Yeah, they do.
At a lot of different price points. They've been doing this stuff for a very long time. And I think it goes back to their, like, that watch doesn't need to be anymore. The whole thing with the clasp on the Grand Seiko Divers, like, well, you don't need, like, this works. It's functional. It's accurate, and I don't need to take the watch off. Like, Yeah, that actually makes a ton of sense as a diver standing over a mile deep ocean to not want to take your watch off. Like, I get it. So like everything that is there is very practical and works. And if it doesn't need to be there, it's not going to be there unless that's the purpose of the watch. Like, so I feel like for what they do, they don't get enough respect.
Yeah, I agree. So, what about Hamilton? I feel like they are underrated.
I agree, and I think I know why.
Why?
I agree that they are very underrated. They have a ton of, like, very excellent watches. What I would say is, they are put into a box by their parent company.
Yes.
And if you think about this watch group, like their party piece or whatever, their most well-known brand they know is Omega because of the moon watch and because of James Bond. So they have that. That's always going to occupy kind of that smack dab in the middle of expensive enough to compete with Rolex, inexpensive enough to compete with Tudor, like Breitling, that whole, I don't want to call it like mid tier, but like the true kind of luxury watch space that includes, you know, you walk into a jewelry show, you see Breitling, you see Omega, you see Rolex, you see Tag, you see, and Tudor, Cartier, all those brands that have their entry point somewhere between $3,000 and $5,000, and the high end in gold and the in the 40s plus, like, we're not talking high horology. We're not talking entry level luxury, but like, that's always going to be Swatch Group's kind of main piece. And then they just have their tiering of brands above and below that. And there has to be enough room for each brand to do something different, not really compete with each other, occupy this space and kind of that space, but not this other space. And it's just like, they are slotted, but like, I think somewhere near to maybe below Tissot, right around Tissot. Tissot leans more dressy, classic, whereas Hamilton is clearly sporty, aviation, military. Like, although you have the Ventura line, which is confusing as hell, because that's a heritage one. But and then above them you've got Longines, which, you know, it's. I think they're ill served by just like, here's your spot in the Swatch Group portfolio, stay in this area. And it's like, they have some absolute bangers, but like, could they get more respect if they, I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. The other one that I don't think gets the requisite amount of respect. And I think this is solely due to awareness or mind shares, Orient.
Yeah.
Was it the Mako 2, I think, that I've got? It just phenomenal. Great watch. In a lot of ways, it's like the crosstown rival to the old SKX Seikos.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just, they're really hard to beat. Is the bracelet phenomenal? No, but you shouldn't expect that at that price.
No.
They do in-house movements. They're very solid. They're an excellent, excellent little watch. Now, to be fair, and like the Bambino, I feel like gets a decent amount of buzz as like simple dressy type watch. Those sort of things don't necessarily speak to me, but you could buy a Bambino and then buy a nice strap for it, and you know, be perfectly well served. You know, the rest of your watch wearing life.
Well, to that end, I would argue as well that, and it gets some buzz here and there, not, you know, notwithstanding your namesake or whatever, but Timex. And I'm not even talking some of the hype pieces that they do. I mean, if you go and you look at the Timex Marlin automatic, the new one that they did with Todd Snyder that's mechanical, you look at that classic 34 millimeter, and you look at the stuff that they've done, or the galleys,
the ones they've done
with their chief designer. Those are, they're pricier, but they are very good looking. And they are very nicely, very innovatively put together, some of the 3D printing that they've done. I think that, you know, for a brand that, you know, takes a licking and keeps on ticking is kind of the slogan, like, there are some things that they do that have been, like, very classic, kind of a watch for the everyman. But, like, I'm not a dress watch guy, but if I ever, like, it's like, you know something? I'm wearing things enough I should have a dress watch. I'm going to go pick whichever dial color 34 millimeter Timex Marlin I want, and to your point, put a nice little leather strap on it, because I'm sure the one that it comes on isn't that great. And I don't like anything. I don't like the lizard. Put a nice, that's going to be it. Like, that is my dress watch. I will spend $250 on a dress watch, and that is it.
The Timex Weekender. I mean, how many people do you know that aren't super into watches that land at, like, I saw this, it looked good, and I bought it, and I wear it, and I love it. Like, that's, it's very, very typical, very unassailable logic.
Yep.
I don't know what other underappreciated brands out there. And probably Rolex, you know, who's ever heard of them? Nice little Swiss company. I hope they make it big someday.
Yeah, there's another one I can think of, and my wife owns one.
Yeah.
Nomos.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
A lot of in-house movements, a lot of manual wind, which keeps things down. And I honestly, for me, the reason I don't look at them as much is because they very rarely put things on bracelets. They are very strap heavy, and they look phenomenal on straps. I just know for me, I like NATO straps. I like leather straps on occasion, but if the watch looks really good on leather but doesn't look really good on nylon, and there's not a good bracelet option, or it's an aftermarket bracelet, it's just not going to get the wrist on. I will say, though, that my wife's Tetra is amazing, and she prefers straps, and it is insanely thin. It's manual wind, and that's why, but, like, holy cow, is it thin? And it's like, okay, like, I get it. Like, I'm glad, like, I can totally appreciate it. And I think in some ways I think Nomos is underappreciated, and they make some really cool complications, and they have really awesome watches, but, like, they don't make a ton on a bracelet, and that, I don't say kills it for me, but, like, that just means that it's never going to be a watch where I'm like, oh yeah, I feel like I'll wear that a lot. It's like, I feel like I'll wear that some. It'll be a nice part of the rotation. It's a great watch, and I'll like it every time I wear it, but I know that I'm not going to wear it a lot.
Yeah. They have to be handled to be believed. That same trip I alluded to roughly 5 years ago, I went to an independent that had Nomos there, and it just phenomenal. Honestly, it's funny, right? Because their thing is the design, first and foremost, right? The dial, the execution, and they do wholeheartedly. I mean, you can get quite a few of their lines for like $1,900, right? That's like kind of their entry level price, and for the in-house movement and the unique design, so well executed on. Just a screaming deal. The one thing that I always ding them for is the cases are afterthoughts. They love to polish. So, and by cases are afterthoughts, specifically to me, the lugs are very much afterthoughts. I would I really liked the square one, but the way that the lugs are on that just ruin is too strong of a word, but it's close to ruin it for me. But also, I mean, come on, who? I'm scrolling through their watches on their website. I guess you also have to love a brand that has a watch that is commemorative for the 375th anniversary of the Peace of Westphalia. Gotta love that. Yeah. That's a deep cut for the listeners.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, God, I would just love if they did the lugs on the Tetra slightly differently, because it really wasn't scratching me where I itched, which is a shame, because it's just freaking cool.
Cool watch.
So cool. Yeah, good. Yeah, that's a good one with the Nomos. I like that.
Yeah.
Oh, the club campuses. I love those stinking things. I'm a sucker for a Cali Dial. I'm a sucker for a Sub Dial. So, yeah.
And it's got
right up my alley.
And a splash of color, Buzzy. Just enough.
Oh, yes.
Just enough color if you want it to have.
Some of them.
We're in some cases a lot.
Yes, much too much color.
Anyway, well, I think we wrap that up.
Yeah, I do too.
Yeah, you know, may not be as popular, may not get as many downloads, but I think it's good to kind of call out who's underappreciated.
You think this is going to be an underappreciated episode?
Might be an underappreciated episode, but you know. 191 episodes in, that's what we're
doing. You know, after 191 episodes, I do not underappreciate our listeners. They're still listening. That's for
true.
Sure.
This is true. This is true. All right, man. Well, until next time.
See ya.